This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hello and welcome to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. Now, many of us might wonder what it's like working with visual effects if you were colorblind. You know, some of us might even think that it'd be extremely difficult, if not impossible. But McLeland Lee has shown that it can be done. And he joins me in the studio today to share more about his journey from, I understand, being a game developer to being a filmmaker. And he's also currently the director of the R&D studio, which is a creative content studio. So I want to find out more about the work that they're doing. They've done some really interesting stuff from what I've seen online. So we'll find out all about that. Lun, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, I'm Lun. Some people know me as McLeland Lee online. So if you're listening to this podcast, hi. I'm currently working for the R&D studio as a creative director. Also, as a director also for some films and animation.
Mm. And I'll get to that in a bit. But when I saw your bio, I was quite interested because you were first working as a game developer before you got into this field. I guess tell me more about that side of things, right? You know, what got you into game development in the first place?
Yeah, since young, I've been always loved to do something creative like games, comic, animation. So like when I graduate, right, I can't find a course that I or job. Mm. Even like when I study, I cannot find a course that I want to go, I mean like enroll.
Mm.
So I actually, during that time, right, there's like this IT crazy, right? Everyone's like, you should study IT. So I just like blindly follow everyone and go to study as a programmer. I'm actually an IT graduate, so I have a software engineering degree.
Mm.
So after I graduate, I realized I might be going into the wrong field. Because in my heart, right, I still want to do something creative.
Mm.
Since young, I always want to do games, make my own games, tell my own stories, everything like that. So when I graduate, I try to find a job that is more creative. So being a games developer, is like, I think it fit my case because a games developer, you need to have like the technical side, which is the programming. You also need to have that creative side, like the game design, the game art, the game animation. So unlike my classmate from my IT college, right, from university, they all went to pure IT field, like pure programmers. So I choose a job that is more fun to do. It's like developing casual games. That time they call it casual games. That time I think is like maybe more than 10 years ago.
Mm.
I'm not sure if anyone still remember this thing called Flash Games.
Mm-hmm.
It's like quite big that time, so I have to relearn this scripting from Flash. And then I tried to interview this company called, I don't think the company exists anymore now. So I got a job in this company, MyGo Solutions, and I work as a game developer.
Mm.
So with my programming skill, and then I have like a bit of drawing skill that time. So it's quite luckily.
It was a mix of what you studied and also what you're passionate about.
Yeah. So it's not too bad. Yeah.
So then, you know, what made you make that switch into visual effects and then animation and then also like filmmaking?
It's hard to describe why that happened because like, you know, right, Flash game, if anyone still remember, is slowly phasing out during one period of time. Like when Steve Jobs say, okay, no more Flash player in iPhone or anything like that. And then you can see like browser doesn't support all the Flash players or anything like that. So that time I start to work as a web developer, so I do website, do some multimedia stuff, and then I realized web is still not as creative as I want, so I slowly goes into film and animation, everything like that.
Mm. Was it difficult to make that transition?
Yeah, surprisingly, it's not that hard because I found that a lot of knowledge is transferable between two different, what is it called, industry or circles, everything like that. So for example, in games, I have to do like games animation, games art.
Mm.
So in animation, there's this thing called the keyframe, the timeline, the in-between. It's actually same as what people do in animation is the same. So maybe the software is different, but the fundamentals is the same. But I do have to relearn some of the software, everything like that. But it's not too bad. It's quite easy.
Mm. Yeah. What was particularly challenging, if there was anything that was?
Challenging, I guess, is because I've been doing games for a lot of years.
Mm.
And then when I try to switch right to different industry, people might not believe I have the capabilities to do that. So it's really hard to find a job or even like freelance or anything like that.
Mm. So I understand that you're a self-taught animator as well. Tell me more about that.
I'm self-taught everything because, as I mentioned earlier, right, I graduated in an IT college. Mm-hmm. So from a pure IT background, I have to learn all this interesting software. I mean, like nowadays we have YouTube, right? Last time I have to like go through like books, online forums, everything like that. Quite interesting. I find it interesting and challenging.
Did that sort of influence your career in the field because you had to learn all these things on your own?
Yeah, it actually kind of like influenced me or a little bit. I wouldn't say it's on a bad way. It's like it's in a good way because it forced me to be a multitask person. And sometimes when people say, right, it's not good to be multitask, but I find it actually is actually quite good. Because when we work in a creative industry or we have to constantly like learn new stuff, like new technology. Even creative, right, it might sound like it's just creative, doesn't involve like technology, right? Because now we are in this digital age, all our software is digital, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to constantly learn new software, new technology. And even now we have like AI, everything like that. So it's a constant learning process.
Now, Lun, I mentioned earlier a bit about your color blindness. I guess that's something that you're quite open about, I understand. Tell me more about that. When did you find out you were colorblind? How does it affect you, I guess, on a day-to-day life?
I actually found out I'm colorblind quite early in my life. I think during form 5. There's one day, right, I don't know why my dad suddenly bought a colorblind testing book. And then like show my brother and me and then like test. And then we realized we cannot see the number in this colorblind test.
Oh no.
So like, oh no, man.
So it's it was by chance.
Yeah, by chance. It's quite funny lah. Like, and then that time right, it's form 5. And then form 5, you have to decide which university you have to go. And then I think my case is okay because I haven't decided to go to IT. But my brother, sorry off topic, but I think this is an interesting story I have to tell. But my brother, he already enrolled in electrical engineering course, which is even worse, because in electrical engineering you have to like know this color in this all this electronics, right? He cannot see the color, so I think his case is worse than me. Yeah, so I still remember there's one more case. I think it's an interesting story. When I'm young, like primary school, I have this art class. So my teacher, I actually paint all this human green.
And then you didn't realize.
I didn't realize. And all my classmates like laughing at me. He's like, oh, the green human. But my art teacher, I think, is very supportive. He says, like, why can't a human green? Say, it's okay, Sergio, like, you can continue painting green. So that time I still don't know I'm colorblind. So I mean, in my life, it doesn't affect it that much. I believe there's a lot of red, green colorblind people in our country. They just don't realize. So to give an example, right, what did I see, right? People always ask this, like, for example, a traffic light, right? The green color for traffic light, I see it as white.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So to answer the question, I don't think it affect me that much.
So then coming to your work now as, you know, working in visual effects and animation, how does your color blindness affect your work? Because a lot of people would think that, okay, you would need colors. You need to know how to distinguish colors in your work.
Yeah. Right? So for creative industry or creative work, right, some people might thought like colors is very important, but in my view, it's different because creative industry is just a big, what is it called? A big umbrella term, right? There's a lot of different work under creative industry. So for example, a comic, a manga, is a Japanese one, it's just black and white. So
that's
you still can do comic. But in my case, because I'm doing visual effects, films and animation, right? So there's work that I should avoid. Like for example, a film, right? A live action film. They will do this color grading, like do this, have to have more cinematic look. I mean, like I can do that, but I might accidentally make some mistake. Maybe I will boost the skin tone too red or something like that. It happened before, so my boss come and say, oh, this one is too red, the skin color. But because now we are using computer to do all this art, right? So we have tools to help me, like this color picker, color eyedropper, right? You can just eyedrop it and then check the values of the colors. So still not too bad, I guess. Yeah. So in a way, I cannot do traditional painting, like watercolor, poster color. That one, there's no digital tool to help me.
That one, you can't avoid the possibility that you might use different colors, right? Do you think that it influences your creative process at all?
So far, I don't think it doesn't really change that much.
Mm.
Because I'm aware that what I see right might be different to what other people see.
Mm.
But so far, I didn't really receive any comments that say my artwork is too saturated or anything like that.
Mm.
But mostly it's just like, say, oh, your painting is very colourful.
Mm.
It could be a side effect.
Yeah. Mm. So when you do tell, I guess when people do find out that you have some colour blindness, right? Mm. Do they have any misconceptions that you've heard before?
Yeah, I think the biggest misconception, even like when I read articles online, right, they say you're colorblind, you still can. Don't worry, you still can work as an engineer, as a doctor. No, you still can work as an artist.
Mm.
You do creative stuff. I think it's still possible. I mean, like, I'm a living example, right?
Mm.
The biggest misconception, I think, is that you don't work in creative industry. Yeah.
Mm, it is possible. So I guess now, coming to your work, you know, you, as I mentioned earlier, you are the director of the R&D studio. Tell me a bit about the studio and the kind of work that you and your team does, right? Because I only mentioned visual effects and animation, but could you share more about your work?
Yeah, so R&D studio is already, I think, more than 10 years.
Mm,
I think maybe it's 12 years. So we start doing like a lot of different works. Mainly it's like in video form, medium. So we do short animations, animation series. We do shoot live action. So sometimes we do project for Astro. I think a few years ago, we did this project for Disney.
Mm.
It's called Wizard of Warner Walk. It's based on the Wizard of Waverly Place.
Yeah.
Yes, that one. We also have this short animation, like a few short animation, like every 1 or 2 years, R&D will do this non-commercial, I guess.
Mm.
We just do this short animation, maybe 5 to 6 minutes, and then we submit to festivals around the world, like, see what we can get.
Is that how the team really sort of exercise your creative process as well?
Yeah, it's part of that. Like, because we cannot just like always doing all this commercial project, we'll burn out. So like, we have like R&D offer the opportunities for the people to like express themselves. Like, so if you have a idea or stories you want to do, so we work together, something like that. So a few years ago, I think we did 3 animation, Batik Girl, and then like the Dalang Steel, which is directed by my boss, Yvonne. And my short animation is called Frame Memories. Maybe I can talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then Kuih Apocalypse. I think Batik Girl is still online in R&D YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone is interested, can go to R&D YouTube channel and look at it.
Mm. Tell me about those interesting projects then. You know, I've seen bits, I've seen pieces about Batik Girl and also Framed Memories, and these both look really interesting. Mm. Tell me more about them.
Yeah. Batik Girl is like actually the very first short animation R&D did, and I believe it's the first few short animation in that style or festival style, right, that Malaysia have. Because previously, all this short animation that, a bit of backstory, because Batik Girl is under the MDEC grant, one of the, last time it's called IPCC, and I believe now it's called the DC3 or something. So usually last time, all the contestants, right, they'll do a trailer for a series, sort of like a marketing material to pitch to potential broadcaster, TV station, or anything like that.
Mm.
But during that year, R&D decide to, hey, why not we just do a pure short animation? It's already have the whole story in this 6 minute or 9 minute.
Mm.
And then we submit for a festival. It's not even, we are not even going to do this into a series.
Mm.
So that year, like my boss, and then we discussed the story, everything. We work with third party that is good in animation, everything like that. So what the girl tell the story of a young girl, it's like she lost her parents. So she goes back to a small town in Terengganu and then live with her grandmother. And the grandmother is like sort of a batik maker or anything like that. So the story starts from there, and then the young girl magically goes into this batik world, writing and that. And for my animation, Frame Memories is actually part of a project. It's called The Spectrum, working together with Singapore side. So R&D studio work together with this Singapore company, which is called Robot Playground Media. The Spectrum is like 7 short animation directed by different directors from Singapore and Malaysia. So I have the opportunities to direct one, which is Frame Memories. Frame Memories is actually a story about a son and the father. So it's a father and son relationship. So, in Asians, like, we have like this very strict parenting.
Mm.
So the story plays around that. And I'm actually quite glad that when in events, right? I mean, like last year, so like when people watch the animation, they actually cry and then they feel they can, I mean, like they have the feeling for the animation. So I'm glad that the animation is like emotional for some people.
I guess what makes you feel proudest when you see your work being out there? Is it moments like that?
Yeah, it's moments like that. People actually says the animation feel very touching and then they can relate what happened in the animation to their life, everything, yeah. That make me feel quite proud, because I believe my boss also submit my frame memories to some festivals. I mean, like, we have, like, won some award, but actually seeing what the audience react to the animation, right, is much more priceless for me.
How much of an impact does the animation have on a story? Because people often think of, like, say, if I watch a short film, it's the important part is the plot, right? Yeah. But how important is having good animation as well?
You mean, like, how the character move? Yeah, the quality of the animation actually play a role, but I wouldn't say it's 100%. Because, like, we human usually is a visual... We are quite visual, right? If the first few seconds is like, why the animation like that, right? They are not, they're really lost interested to continue to watch. So I say it actually play a part, but I don't think it's everything.
I guess to wrap up this conversation, Lun, you know, would you have a takeaway message, I guess, for people who, we did highlight your colorblindness a bit, right? Maybe people who find themselves in the same position, you know, don't know what to, well, are questioning if they can work in the creative industry or not. What's your message to them?
Yeah, I mean, be much more confident. If you're colorblind, right, don't worry. You still can work in the creative industry. If you're like me, you're just like IT graduate, right? You want to do creative stuff, don't worry. I doesn't have any diploma or degree in art. I still get a job in the creative industry. I mean, I'm the example, right? So believe in yourself.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today, Lun.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to McLeelun Lee, the director of the R&D studio, about his career journey in visual effects and animation as well. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download our podcast on bfm.my or on our BFM app. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.